Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Man Who Broke the Moon by Michael James Plouffe with Devin G.P. Plouffe, narrated by Noah Michael Levine. Prologue. The program director sat at his desk and watched the scientist march down the hallway to the door at the very end. The scientist stopped at the threshold, hesitating for a moment before knocking on the door. A big black mechanical eyeball sprang from a hole in the wall. It scanned the scientist's body, and the program director watched through the monitor as the man squirmed beneath its gaze.
"You may enter, Remy," said the director.
The door opened, and Remy stepped through the threshold. The director didn't so much as glance at the nervous man. Instead, he kept on working on his computer. His office was filled with pictures of a young man in fleet uniform who looked remarkably like him. All the furnishings in the room were black, and the grating of the floor as well as the walls were a metal the color of pewter. The program director was sitting with perfect posture and the shoulders of a man touched by Father Time, but not by weakness. His suit was of the darkest black, which made the gold fleet eagle just below his breast pocket stand out. Behind him lurked two shadows that were barely visible in the depths of the dim room. One stood with a single light shining in the middle of its chest. It was an android, one that looked remarkably human. The other figure stood much larger, filling the entire left corner of the room. Finally, the director turned his gaze to his subordinate.
"Remy, I am assuming you have finally ended your failure. Otherwise, you would not be here."
"Yes, sir."
Remy quivered as he spoke, his chin expanding as he tried to stand a bit taller.
"The process worked. We have finally merged the computer with one of the hybrids, number 7.
"Lucky number 7,"
the director said with a faint smile to himself. Then his hard eyes turned to Remy once more.
"And the other 6 subjects?"
"Well, sir, I actually have good news about that as well. We have managed to harvest some of their remains and merge them with this new technology. I think you will be very pleased with the results."
"It's about time that you please me," said the director with a laugh. "You know, had you told me that you failed again, I would have killed you."
The scientist was quivering and seemed to be on the verge of soiling himself. With disgust, the director sneered.
"You have a weak soul, Remy. You weren't worth your weight in shit until now. But you have redeemed yourself. Return to your quarters and wait for your next assignment."
The scientist bit his lip and cleared his throat, but the director wasn't paying him any attention.
"Mark, you said I would be able to go home after this."
The program director looked to Remy with a sneer, and the thin man subconsciously took a step back.
"You don't have a home anymore," the director said evenly. "You don't have a life anymore either. You belong to me now. And if you want to avoid finding out what lies behind the only door you have left out of this place, I recommend you turn around and return to your quarters. And if you ever call me by a name other than Sir again, well, you will be our next experiment."
The program director offered Remy a devilish grin, and the nervous man shakily made his exit. He touched the glass of the picture frame sitting closest to him. It featured the same young man. However, in this picture, he was standing with his friend and fellow soldier, Jason Erickson. The program director stared at Jason for a full minute before pulling his shaking hand away, and he let a single tear fall to land on the shining eagle adorning his breast pocket.
"Yes, Captain. You have much to atone for."
Chapter 1. Life's a Beach. Captain Jason Erickson stared north across the turquoise water, where Buck Island waited like a slumbering leviathan in the Caribbean Sea. He scratched at the scar on his chin, his 2-day-old beard rough as sandpaper. The weather was hot, too hot. He remembered it being warm back when he was a boy, but not this damn warm. Standing on the back deck of his million-dollar beach house alone, he couldn't help but laugh. The laughter was maniacal, with mirth of the insane flavor. His voice carried with it a contradictory edge, a bittersweet wisdom. No matter where you go, there you are. The adage played in his head like a relentless mosquito at dusk. His skin itched as though it were infested with no-see-ums, although he hadn't been on the beach in 3 days. He lowered his sunglasses to his face and stared at the slowly setting sun. It reminded him of the explosion on Lunar 1. With a sigh, he tipped back the last of his Pacifica and drank it down. Despite the heat, the beer was still cold.
He didn't drink slow enough for them to get warm these days.
"Sir," said Pal 2000, with a voice laced with concern,
"should you be drinking so much?"
"Shut up, Pal," Jason told the robot.
"Sir, I do not mean to be a nuisance, but I am obligated to warn you of health concerns and report them back to your supervisors."
"I'm retired. I don't have supervisors, unless you mean these awesome shades I'm wearing."
The robot cocked his head to the side, the display expressing confusion with an emoji.
"Sir, was that an attempt at a joke?"
"Ah, go stick it up your oil hole," said Jason.
"I don't have an oil hole, sir. But rather, it is more like a..."
"If you don't stop talking, I'm going to use your ass for target practice," said Jason, waving around the pistol in his hand.
"As you know, any harm purposely done to my unit will result in monetary fines and fees. I would advise against..."
"They can put it on my tab," said Jason.
Pal 2000 sighed, which just pissed Jason off more. He glared at the 6-foot-tall blue-and-gray robot that had been pestering him the last 7 days, and he wondered how long it would remain operational at the bottom of the ocean, if he tied the arms and legs together.
"I am sorry that I'm causing you so much anger," said Pal 2000, nodding affably, his face changing to one of concern. "That is not my intention. My primary goal is to help you live a healthy, happy, and fruitful life, and..."
"And to report everything I do back to Veteran Affairs. You're a snitch, Pal, and nobody likes a snitch.
If you do not attempt to harm yourself or others, then there is nothing to snitch about."
Pal 2000 pointed at the sky like a professor making a point.
"So, as they say, the ball is in your court, sir."
"Go get recycled," said Jason, and lit up a joint.
"Perhaps you would like to add to your daily log,"
said the robot, walking over to him with a friendly digital smile. Jason glanced at the screen that acted as the robot's face, and the cartoonish expression disappeared, replaced by a thumbs-up emoji.
"I told you not to use emojis. What do I look like, a 15-year-old girl?"
"Pardon me, sir, but the demographic for veterans who enjoy emojis is 89%. Perhaps they will grow on you."
Jason flicked the cherry off his joint, calmly stashed the roach in his pocket, and picked up Pal by the crotch and armpit. The bucket of bolts was at least 125 pounds, but Jason hadn't missed a workout in 25 years.
"I don't know who the hell you're surveying, but they're a bunch of dipshits."
"Sir, I advise against this,"
said Pal as Jason threw him over the balcony rail. He wiped his hands together and glanced up at the full moon, which had risen only a few hours ago, and now stalked the sun, hiding behind lazy clouds and waiting to steal the day away. The scar that had been carved diagonally across the moon gave it a menacing appearance. It looked like a reptilian eye to Jason, and he turned from the disturbing image and headed through the slowly swaying silk curtains to the bar.
"You know, Pal," he yelled over his shoulder, "I had planned on retiring here with Melissa and Ember. Had dreamed about it my entire career. And now, here I am, wifeless, daughterless, and the proud owner of a lonely little mansion in paradise, with only a bucket of bolts to keep me company."
"I'll be right up, sir,"
came Pal's voice over the speakers, disrupting the music. Jason rolled his eyes as he poured himself a margarita, put his elbows up on the bar, and drank half the glass. He stared at his reflection in the large mirror, partially obstructed by every variety of rum that could be found on St. Croix and the surrounding islands. Once he had scoffed at the old-timers talking about life slipping by faster the older you got, but now he could only laugh at his youthful naivete. 1 minute he had graduated college with dreams of changing the world, and the next minute he was a 2-decade veteran of WW3, whose every dream was a nightmare. Pal 2000 came up the stairs with a cactus protruding from behind his right knee joint and a flower wrapped around his antenna.
"I am happy to say that your actions have only cost you 450 UN credits. My unit just needs a good buffering."
The digital eye winked.
"Well, don't expect me to buff your unit. I don't swing that way."
"Swing that way, sir?"
Jason tossed back the rest of his drink and made himself another strong batch of margarita, adding limes from the tree that he and Ember had planted just 5 years ago.
"God damn. Has it been that long?"
Jason stared at the mirror, searching for something, anything. He hardly recognized himself these days. The thought caused him to chuckle at the pathetic cliché, but his reflection cringed at the sound. Crow's feet had begun to overstay their welcome at the corners of his eyes, eyes that were puffy and bloodshot. His once short-cropped brown hair was now shaggy and unkempt, and along with his salt and brown sugar beard, suggested a mellow surfer look that was the envy of other men his age, but a stark contradiction to how he felt. His body still looked like that of an athletic 20-something, but his bones felt their age. Sore as he often was at 40, he wondered what it must feel like to be 80. He picked up the razor from the marble counter and imagined cutting through his own wrist. If he was going to bleed out, he was going to do it right, and in the ocean. It was better to be eaten by sharks than worms, after all, and he would probably take Pal with him, just for the hell of it. Jason laughed to himself, and he noticed how Pal's digital expression changed to one of concern.
"Sir, would you like to add to your daily log?" came the faux-friendly digital voice.
Jason swayed on his stool. With a shrug, he tossed back a shot of tequila, and then another.
"Sir?"
"I never truly understood Melissa," Jason found himself saying.
Pal 2000 perked to attention.
"Losing Ember was hard. The hardest thing I've ever endured," said Jason, his throat constricting. He choked down the emotion. WW3 was a piece of fucking cake compared to losing M. But I don't understand how Melissa could have done it."
He turned the razor this way and that, catching the reflection of the Caribbean sun inches from the horizon.
"I do not understand self-termination either," said Pal 2000, in a voice both soft and full of understanding,
but he shut up when Jason pointed the gun at him. One of Jason's favorite songs, Margaritaville, began on the sound system, and with a thin smile, he brought the razor down.
"Sir!"
Jason chopped up the cocaine. He carved out 5 3-inch lines and glanced at Pal, holding out the rolled-up $100 bill.
"Want a bump?" he asked Pal 2000.
The robot shook his bucket of a head, his face becoming a frown.
"Then shut the fuck up."
Bill to nose, Jason bent and snorted the first line up the right nostril.
"Sir, cocaine is a Class A controlled—"
Jason squeezed the trigger slowly and shot Pal 2000 in his digital forehead. The robot staggered back and held up defensive hands. The screen blinked in and out sporadically, having locked on a face full of surprise, and Jason couldn't help but laugh. He snorted the second line up the left nostril and half of the third line up the right again. He smudged the remaining third line and rubbed it on his teeth before bellowing the chorus along with Jimmy Buffett and raising the tequila bottle in salute to the sun. On the TV, the news was covering another royal wedding, while on another screen, the UN was celebrating the induction of the U.S., Russia, and North Korea, all countries which had been central to the strife of the 20s and 30s. He looked at the screen with disgust. The world had gone to shit a long time ago. Why had he decided to save it?
Sir?
The robot stuttered and twitched, that same surprised expression locked on his digital face.
You have done considerable damage to my unit, and I'm afraid that it will cost you.
Put it on my tab,
Jason yelled and emptied the clip into the bucket of bolts. He turned from the twitching robot and staggered out to the balcony. His eyes were drawn to the moon, and the memory of the lunar explosion flashed in his mind, along with blood, slit wrists, and a child with pale skin hooked up to too many machines. Jason groaned, and the groan turned into a primordial growl.
Some people claim that there's a woman to blame, but I know. It's my own damn fault,
he bellowed before returning to the bar to retrieve the bottle. He whirled toward the front door with a tequila bottle in hand and lit a cigar, one of many he always kept in his floral print shirt pocket. Yeah, he was that guy. In the garage, an ivory-white 1974 Chevelle waited. Stripped of all the bullshit government safety regulations and self-driving capabilities, the white bitch, as he fondly called her, waited to eat the pavement. Chapter 2. Burgers in Paradise. The sun set on St. Croix as Jason headed west toward Christiansted from Coakley Bay. He passed a tiny Japanese shitbox electric car and flipped the bird to the two morons inside, who sat facing the wrong way, sipping on umbrella drinks. He wondered what the car's computer would do if he sideswiped the ride. Suddenly, Pal 2000's face came to life on the halo screen on the side of the tourist's car.
"Sir, I highly recommend that you slow down—"
Jason cranked the wheel, smashing the screen on the side of the shitbox with his metal monster.
Welcome to fucking paradise, he yelled at the shocked tourists.
The electric car predictably braked and pulled to the left side of the road before exploding with a puff of safety balls. Jason laid on his horn as he passed. He turned up the radio, which was linked to the house and still playing Jimmy Buffett. Burgers in Paradise screamed from the speakers. He pushed the car to its limits, something he enjoyed about St. Croix. He could get away with just enough to have a damn lot of fun, and he always tempted fate. After another 2 miles of winding island roads, he pulled over at a burger joint that was aptly named. The owner of Burgers in Paradise, one Bobby Bishop, rushed out when he saw Jason park. He looked a bit like a cross between a deadhead and a beach bum. The man always wore tie-dye t-shirts and a fishing hat, and his rugged beard hung to his chest. His apron hung down over his large stomach, and attached to his wrist was an automatic release insulin system. He was the sole proprietor of the burger shack, and the joint was popping. A lot of the locals were out for a bite to eat, as well as the usual set of tourists about this time of year. Jason licked his lips when he thought of the taste of the Paradise Burger paired with his favorite margarita.
"Jason, you don't want to be here right now," said Bobby.
"What the hell?"
said Jason, getting out of his car.
"You hooked up to the PAL system, too?"
"I'm serious, man,"
said Bobby, looking way too worried for someone flipping burgers in Paradise. He glanced over his shoulder warily.
"Some guy's been asking around for you. Rough-looking dudes. Colombians, I think."
"They still here?"
"No, but—"
"Then what are you so worked up about?"
Jason brushed past his flustered friend and walked up to the bar.
"Hey, Jason,"
said the bartender.
"Hey, Jules."
"Painkiller?"
"You know me too well,"
he said with a smile and lit a cigar. She winked.
"Not well enough."
Jules turned to make Jason's drink, and he cocked his head to get a better view of her ass. Bobby came around the bar and leaned in conspiratorially.
"What's this about, man? Why are those dudes after you? Is it about a, you know?"
He glanced around at the dozen or so patrons in and around the bar.
"The cocaine?"
said Jason, enjoying the way the word made his friend squirm.
"Nah, man. I always pay my debts."
"Then what?"
"Thanks, Jules,"
said Jason, as she placed the drink in front of him.
"Why are you so serious, Bobby?"
The boozer let out a sigh.
"Look, you say it's not about the product, then I believe you. I just don't want to get pulled into something here, you know?"
"Dangerous,"
said Jason with a smirk. He couldn't help but mock the man.
"No, no, of course not. You can move 5 kilos of coke a week without any trouble, didn't you know?"
Bobby's pathetic face pleaded.
"Don't worry about it," said Jason. "They don't want me because I didn't pay for the drugs. They want me because I banged their boss's wife."
"Jesus Christ. You got a death wish, man?"
Jason shrugged and took a drink.
"Well, I would lie low for a while if I were you."
"You're not me."
Bobby shook his head.
"They had a T-27 model with them."
"Yeah, well, I've got an overbearing PAL 2000, and knowing him, he'll be here any minute."
As if on cue, a drone taxi landed, and out lumbered PAL 2000, twitching and jerking and scanning the patrons.
"Ah, there you are, sir."
"Looks like they already got to him,"
said Bobby, noting the many bullet holes in the robot's chest.
"Nah," said Jason. "That was me."
"I'm afraid the damn damages are going to cost you 50,000 credits, sir."
"We've got other problems right now."
"What problems?
"First, fix your goddamn speech impediment."
"Working on it, sir."
Jason finished his drink and waited, nodding at Jules when she pointed at his glass from the other end of the bar.
"Problem fixed, sir."
"Why'd you shoot your robot?" Bobby asked.
"He's a pain in the ass. He's on orders to protect me from myself, but he must protect me from other harm as well. Isn't that right, pal?"
"That is correct, sir."
"Do you have any combat programs installed?"
"As you know, robots cannot do harm to humans. It is the first law of—"
"I'll take care of the humans. I need you to take out a modified T-27.
"The modification of robots is against the law, sir."
"Yeah, no shit. But bad guys don't care about the law. That's what makes them bad guys."
Pal considered that.
"I'm afraid that even with martial arts programs, I would be incapacitated by a T-27 in less than 7 seconds.
"Good. Then you can buy me some time if need be."
Bobby poured himself a shot and tossed it back.
"Listen, Jason, you should get off island for a few days. Let this whole thing blow over."
"Banging a kingpin's wife doesn't blow over."
"You're right," said Bobby contemplatively. "You're screwed. Any requests for a final meal?"
Is that your way of saying, get away from my restaurant before trouble comes looking for you?
Yeah, man. Something like that.
You're my fucking hero, Bobby Bishop. Good thing I'm not here for your help. You got this week's take?
It's in the office.
I'll wait here.
Bobby offered him a sympathetic glance and disappeared into the small diner through a beaded curtain. Jules, who'd been trying to bring Jason home for a month, glided over to him as she wiped down the bar.
"What kind of trouble you get yourself in this time?"
she asked, offering him a devious grin.
Nothing I can't handle, he said with a wink.
I bet you can handle a lot.
Jesus, girl, don't make it so damn easy.
Bobby came back through the curtain carrying a bulging manila envelope and nodded toward Jason's car.
Well, sugar tits, I gotta be heading out, said Jason before tossing Jules a $20 tip.
All right, sugar dick, said Jules. Thanks for the tip, but next time, I want the whole thing.
Jason shook his head, enjoying one last glimpse of her swollen cleavage before heading to his car. Bobby waited, staring up at the cracked moon.
You gonna need some more product?
Jason asked as he took the envelope and tossed it in his back seat.
Not this week. Aren't you gonna count the money?
Nah.
Jason got in his car and started her up. She rumbled to life, catching the attention of half the patrons.
What were these guys driving?
Bobby turned from the moon.
It true what they say, Jason. Was it really you who did that?
Jason glanced over Bobby's shoulder at the crack in the moon. He said nothing. Bobby watched him closely, saying,
They weren't driving. They were flying. It's a black air Hummer.
Thanks, Bob.
Pal 2000 got on the passenger seat and put on his seatbelt before waving at Bobby.
Goodbye, Mr. Bishop.
See you later, pal.
Why do you bother being nice to them? They don't have feelings, you know.
Not yet, said Bobby, glancing warily at Pal 2000. But when those little bastards become aware, they're going to remember who their friends were.
Well, I guess you're thinking ahead, said Jason before relighting his cigar.
You should, too.
Jason rolled his eyes.
You know, you and Pal would get along great. He could monitor your blood pressure while you slap your meat around.
Sir, I am programmed to monitor only your blood pressure, which at the moment is quite...
Shut up, Pal. See you around, Bobby.
Not if I see you first.
Jason shook his head and put the car in gear. He hooked his arm around the passenger seat as he backed out, and out of the corner of his eye, he caught the flash of headlights. Something heavy slammed into the back end of the car, whipping it around 45 degrees and leaving Jason staring down the road heading west.
Sir, if I am not mistaken, you have been located by the cartel, said Pal 2000.
No shit, Sherlock, said Jason.
He slapped the stick into gear and peeled out, leaving the air Hummer hovering in blue smoke. Chapter 3 Bat Outta Hell. The white Chevelle shot down the road like a backdoor man caught with his pants down. The road quickly led to a sharp turn. Jason came in hot, pulled the e-brake as he turned just before the road did, and drifted around it before stomping on the gas once more. Glancing in the rear view, he saw no sign of the air Hummer.
Where are they? He asked Pal 2000.
By my calculations, they are right above us, sir.
Fret not. I have alerted the authorities. You what? Don't answer that.
The roof suddenly caved in, and Jason reflexively slunk down in his seat to avoid a concussion. Pal wasn't so quick, and ended up denting the roof like a bowl around his round metal head.
I'm stuck, sir.
Just hold on to your ball bearings, said Jason.
He took the gun from the small of his back with his left hand and fired three rounds into the sky. The air Hummer sped ahead some 200 feet and turned above the road with the agility of a hummingbird, its rotors a black blur of motion. The glass window was too darkly tinted for Jason to see who was inside, but he could just imagine the snarling face of Eduardo Valencia staring back at him. Mounted guns folded out on each side of the egg-shaped air Hummer, and Jason popped the safety latch on the nitrous button and squeezed hard. Fire erupted from the ends of the air Hummer's twin guns as the car suddenly lurched forward, surging from 30 to 60 miles per hour in a heartbeat. Bullets ricocheted off the hood and left their imprint on the windshield, and Jason flipped the bird as they passed beneath the air Hummer.
Bulletproof glass, bitches!
Sir, a window is not bulletproof if it's rolled down. For your safety, I would suggest rolling your window up and traveling swiftly but safely to the nearest police station. I have calculated a route, and—
Hey, pal! Knock-knock.
Sir, this is not the best time for jokes.
Jason checked the side mirrors as he hugged another turn and almost made air off the hill that followed.
Just answer the damn door. Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Up.
Up who?
Up yours.
Another sharp turn presented itself, and Jason took it faster than was advisable for the average driver. Most people didn't even bother getting a license these days, and the last gas vehicle had been made nearly 40 years ago. Instead, people depended on electric and solar shitboxes with a top speed of exactly 55 miles per hour. Their loss. Jason caught sight of the air Hummer in his side mirror and cranked the steering wheel, turning down a side street as he reached Christiansted. With any luck, the police drones would intercept Eduardo and his buddies for speeding. Lights erupted behind him, and Jason knew they had at least gotten the attention of the land drones.
Sir, I advise that you pull over.
Zip it, pal.
In the side mirror, Jason saw another police drone join the first, and he shot down another street that would lead them out of town. The RoboCops looked a lot like the PAL series, except for one leg rather than two, which ended in a wheel.
Driver, pull over. You have been recorded speeding through a residential area,
came the digital voices of the two cops speaking as one.
Sir,
do you really think that one of these times I'm going to say, you know what, pal, you're right, I'm going to pull over now?
That is my hope, sir.
You don't have hope. You're a microwave on a garbage can, so shut the f—
One of the RoboCops exploded, and bullets rattled against the back of the car. Jason sped down Main Street, ignoring traffic lights and the honking horns of drone cars. The other drone cop took a hit to its wheel well and crashed into a building. The air Hummer was hot on his tail, and Jason soon found himself out of ideas.
Where are the goddamn hover cops?
They are en route, sir, but they are coming from far away. There is a house fire on the east side.
Jason glanced at Powell with trepidation.
Whose house?
Yours, sir.
Son of a bitch!
Jason slammed the dash, hit his head on the roof, and pounded on that a few times.
Why didn't you tell me sooner?
PAL 2000 turned to him, and on his halo screen, a blinking cartoonish face offered him a pathetic expression.
I figured you had enough on your plate, sir.
Jason gulped down tequila and threw the bottle into the air above the car. Behind him, the bottle smashed on the air Hummer's dome window. Bullets rattled over the car in response, and Jason flashed them his middle finger again.
All right. If that's the way you bastards want to play it, then that's the way we'll play it.
He hung a right onto Hilltop Road, surging up it at 50 miles an hour. His pursuers were lost behind the canopy of tangled trees for a moment, and Jason calculated the distance to the spot he had chosen.
Sir, we are leaving the town, and without the help of the local authorities, your chances of surviving this confrontation are 119-1.
Never tell me the odds.
Sir, from your bio, I know that is your favorite quote from Star Wars, but I must remind you, I am not C-3PO, and you are not Han Solo.
Thanks for crushing my dreams, man.
The road became worse the farther up into the hills they went, forcing Jason to slow down. With any luck, the air Hummer would have flown ahead of them to the nearest spot where the canopy opened on the road. It was a corner that Jason knew well, and it was one he had imagined driving off many times.
Did I mention that you should hold on to your ball bearings?
He asked PAL 2000.
You did, sir.
Then kiss your oil hole goodbye.
They came around a corner onto a stretch of road that crept upward for 30 feet before abruptly hooking left, and there, at the top of the hill, hovering just a few feet from the cliff, the air Hummer waited. Jason floored it, waiting for the perfect moment to pop the nitrous. The air Hummer's twin gun spewed fire, and the windshield finally gave in. Jason hit the nitrous, and the car lurched forward with a squeal.
Shit!
PAL 2000 screamed as they rocketed off the end of the road into open air and collided with the air Hummer. Chapter 4. Between a Rock and a T-27. The wind sent the curtains dancing slowly, alluringly. Jason walked down the hall, the walls passing by like behemoths in a dream. It was dark, but the baseboard motion lights illuminated the gloom, shining down thinly, creating elongated circles on the hardwood floor. Melissa had insisted on the wide, thick boards. She had also insisted on shiplap and pastel oranges and reds for the trim. Jason hadn't cared either way. He just wanted her to be happy. He was beginning to see things in the shadows, though. The reds and oranges became easy to mistake for blood and gore, and his discomfort slowly grew as he walked down the hall. He passed a black-and-white painting of a carousel. Far in the background, Jason thought he could make out a fleck of red. He continued down the hallway. Darkness slowly grew, and the baseboard of the hallway gave way to LED strip lights.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?